Welcome to the Tech Nerd Podcast. I had this is like food week here. This is what we're doing. Nick Anastasiadis is the CEO of Second Kitchen. I was recently at the Light Bank supper, and if you're one of the people who are fortunate enough to get invited to this, you should say yes. His company came up numerous times. They've been raising money. They've been landing money. They're just kicking ass. And if you listen to the podcast, you heard Crafty like 2 days ago. They were on the show, and now Nick's on here talking about Second Kitchen. It's like two businesses that are like in your mind maybe directly competing, and yet in their mind and in my mind they have absolutely nothing to do with each other. One serves one purpose, Crafty, providing offices with the ability to supply their employees with food and help build the culture and all this stuff. And then Second Kitchen, which is like, listen, there's enough kitchens around. We don't need another kitchen. We will use all the kitchens that are around us and just supply the food. And you order in an app. And like he says, Nick even talks about it. It's a data company. That's like what they are. It's a supply chain company. And I think that is one of the coolest things on the planet. When you're a business and you can simplify and knock all the stuff off and literally just like minimize it down to like, we are a data supply chain company. We just happen to facilitate restaurants selling food to customers in places that aren't the restaurant. But it's simple enough, but it's super fascinating. Anyway, Nick and I go through this entire thing, and he does an exceptional job in just explaining how it worked, and just it was a very good interview. And of course, we heard another pitch from Cardboard Live, republic.co/cardboard-live. You can invest in these companies by $100, less, $10, whatever. And it's just, I don't know. For me, it's part of it is as a founder turned investor, investor turned founder, I love sitting down with other founders and talking about the pitches and looking at what we would invest in versus not invest in. And I thought Nick had a really good kind of approach or vision to the pitch, which if you're a founder, I think it's worth listening to from the standpoint of getting feedback. If you're an investor, it's worth listening to somebody who has had a successful company. Their two cents is maybe worth more than, you know, more than a dollar. So anyway, we are going to do our inbox before we get to Nick here, and it's another good one. And in doing so, you can see why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori and get your first 2 months for free. Here's the question, Julian Mann, outsourcing for growth. I think I know a little bit about this one, just a touch. I've always dreamed of running a large company with hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. However, as my startup looks to scale, there are so many options to outsource different parts of the business, supply chain, logistics, customer service, sales. When is it important to hire employees over contract work? Who should be my first hire? Hire for need. Personal belief is follow the path, fastest path to revenue. So hire positions that have an immediate return on investment, not just paying you enough money to put that person in play, but paying enough money to they're bringing enough revenue that it pays for them and more. That's what profit is. But when it comes to hires, I look at things from like, I look at like, I'm going to make this really easy. It's easy if you're a sports fan or particularly a football fan. I look at it like I'm the CEO founder. I'm the quarterback. I know what I'm trying to do. I'm out there on the field making plays. I need a running back. I need a good wide out. And it would be amazing if I had like a great guard or tackle, but like that is your CTO ultimately. I need some playmakers. And then I want to start putting people around them that help the playmakers become a unit that just kicks ass. And in the case of outsourcing, depending on what it is, if it's sales, you need one badass salesperson who can train up the troop and keep it rolling. And then you can outsource, you know, a call center or some stuff like that. If it's on the tech side, it's all block and tackle. I want to have my core team be supported by a slot receiver and a tight end that can absolutely help my running back stand out or my key wide receiver make plays down the field. But the block and tackling is sort of handled so that those plays are big rather than the entire line folds and I get sacked before I get off the ground. Did any of that make any sense? I don't know if it did or not, but it did in my head. What I'm trying to say is outsourcing your talent is not something that I would do on my core team. If it's just a solo non-technical founder, you might have to have an app and MVP built, and then you might want to find a technical co-founder, but I would not name them CTO. I would just make them your co-founder, and because they're putting in risk. But then after that, I would start trying to hire your core team who will always be working on the core product and the core business and will be in the vision rooms with you and the road mapping rooms with you and all that stuff. And then you start looking at, all right, now we're about to scale. I need a salesperson who's going to lead it and manage it. Then I can get a call center in place. And on the technology side, I need to find the proper mixture of onshore, offshore so that I'm not paying an arm and a leg as I scale my team up and down. But my core developer, my CTO, or my core engineer are stars. They're running back, wide out star. The rest of them sort of work in conjunction. Does that make sense? All right, good. If you have questions, you can just email me at hello@technoroy.com. And I'm not going to promise it's me, but like someone will forward it to me. Okay? Go beyond email marketing with True Automation by signing up for ActiveCampaign.com at Technori. I should say that again, ActiveCampaign.com/Technori. And get your first 2 months for free. So with that said, we're going to move over to my interview portion here with Second Kitchen CEO Nick Anastasiadis. Yeah, this is definitely like food week here.
I know.
It's so crazy.
It's awesome, yeah.
It's great to have you on the show, obviously. I would love to know sort of your story individually and then get into the company because I've heard a lot about you. I've heard a lot about the company. I had dinner at the Light Bank Supper Club, and Second Kitchen came up a bunch of times.
Awesome.
Which is great news for everybody. So maybe walk me through sort of your story that brings you to wanting to start this.
Yeah, for sure. So I actually grew up in Beirut, Lebanon.
Okay.
And I came to the U.S. when I went to Berkeley. I studied business and psychology, and it just happens that, it was the tech hub, and I just caught the tech bug, I guess,
yeah.
And started working with startups. I liked design and product experience quite a bit, and so I started my own design agency in San Francisco, and really was part of the founding story for a lot of startups in SF. And actually, through that process, I met my current co-founders, John Elron and Arik Geisler. And we started with a very, very, quintessential startup, which actually is parodied in Silicon Valley, season 5.
Yep.
It's called Red Pie. It's a pizza delivery company.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we did that. We, it was the fastest pizza delivery in the world, actually. We started it in San Francisco. And one of the marketing campaigns was working with bars that didn't have kitchens.
Yep.
And so we basically, we started to go there and putting our menus in these places. And so the idea for the company didn't, it was right by itself, we didn't go forward with it. But fast forward to today, I basically got my MBA at Northwestern Kellogg.
Boom, go Cats.
Boom, there you go. And that idea of going to places that didn't have kitchens kind of stuck with us. And we did a pilot here in Evanston. And, it worked out really, really well. We basically went to Sketchbook Brewing in Evanston, put a bunch of menus, put a kiosk in the bar. And the same day, customers started basically placing orders. And we knew we had a winner. Without doing, a lot of the marketing and a lot of the customer acquisition, we just started getting orders. It was incredible.
It's so logical to me, especially when you talk about the pizza at bar and thing. Because there's a bunch of bars, obviously, in Chicago that you can bring your own food and things. And the amount of like bars, bowling alleys, places that people love to hang out at, and they just order their own food and it's random.
Yeah.
There's so much money being left on the table by local places that could supply the food or by partnerships where the bar creates a partnership with a local place to provide them with food. There's so much stuff there. I see why you guys jumped out of that and moved more into something that has like a bigger user base that's more predictable.
Yeah.
But the concept is so like so sweet because, we talked about Crafty being something that's a little bit more, it's not organized, but it's like more of in office food rather than like the office is able to utilize a tool that brings them whatever they want.
Exactly.
Which I think is the key differentiator is like, I'm going to hone on this one point and then we can, start talking more about Second Kitchen and how it works.
Sure.
But like one of the points that Ishan brought up from Crafty was that if you do provide a service like food, if at any point you decide to take that off the table, pun intended, the reaction is very big and very bad.
Yeah.
And so that's a big barrier to entry to like decide we're going to offer this now.
Yeah.
No matter how big we get.
Yeah.
We're going to offer this.
Yeah.
So you offer the ability to say, well, we do offer this, but it's not on us necessarily. And that, to me, I think is a huge, unique piece that makes us open for everybody.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Basically, if you're opening up a business today, you must have a kitchen because that's what customers want, yep. Right? A lot of the businesses we work with, they basically say customers go in the door, ask if they have food, and then leave, right? You must have food.
Yep.
So what we want to do is, for any business owner, you basically can think of you have a decision to make. Either go through the investment of setting up your own kitchen, which involves the food licenses and the people and the inventory and the wastage, or you can just set up Second Kitchen and serve the best food in your neighborhood. That could be the neighbor across the street. It can be a place from two blocks away. You're still deciding. You're still making your own menu, right? Yeah. You can make food pairings. You can have happy hour specials. It still has all the benefits.
It's like Craftier, Blue Apron, and Grubhub mate and have a child, and they would call it Second Kitchen.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Bottom lines look good for everybody. So tell me, a little bit more about sort of the actual business part of this, how you guys make this work. How do you, one thing that comes to mind is like, if you're working with larger organ, like Let Us Entertain You type mm-hmm. things.
Sure.
Very obviously predictable quality control.
Yeah.
I think of our friends like from Fuda.
Mm-hmm.
So Fuda, who is similar but totally different at the same time.
Yep.
There's so many different options, but like they have quality control issues that are like the big killer for them is quality control issues. For you, I got to imagine it's delivery on time quality, and the food sort of is not, you're not transporting and preparing the food on site.
Correct.
So that's how you avoid the quality problems that Fuda has. And walk me through how the actual model works.
Yeah. So, first of all, for the business that's installing Second yep. Kitchen, we offer everything completely free of charge. So the menus, the integration, even the hardware, the kiosk, and the customer support, it's all taken care of. All yep. you have to do is choose which restaurant you want to work with and the food items you want to serve. It's super easy. For the restaurant, what we offer is the ability to expand their dining room across the neighborhood. So they don't think of it as delivery per se, as yep. I'm delivering to a place nearby. It's basically, table number 24 that happens to be in the brewery across the street.
Yep.
And that distinction allows us, first of all, to be much, much faster than any traditional food delivery that exists today.
Yep.
And second, for the restaurant, it's delivered, fast and hot, and it's delivered in their control, right? Because they're just taking the food and delivering it across the street, so to speak.
And I also like the fact that I'm assuming this, that you sort of draw like an invisible circle around the location and make sure that like I'm not ordering Lumel Nadis from Wheaton.
Yeah.
When I'm, you know what I mean? Like
for sure.
Stuff that like limits your ability to control it.
Absolutely. It does depend how dense the place is yep. in general, but it is incredibly, it's as local as it can get.
Which I think is unique and cool.
Yeah.
Like, and I think one of the struggles, so like again, like Fuda sets up shop and they pick a random place and they put the food out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no options.
Yeah.
It's a short menu from one place, which is good if you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also good if you've got like a building full of multi-use,
mm-hmm.
but there's no real control. The next level is like we facilitate and curate all the food for you, which is also good because you can control it and you have the culture piece, but I don't get to pick my food and I'm a little annoyed and whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's you, which is much more. And then there's like just ordering Grubhub in general. Like it ends up just being totally off suit. So it's like I don't think people out there maybe would recognize how much of a market opportunity there is across the board and how it can be subdivided in 5, 6, 7 different ways.
Totally.
And be very, and like each one of them be just ridiculously successful.
Absolutely. Yeah. The food market is just crazy. And Chicago is a hub for a lot of the startups happening.
Yeah.
You know more than me.
And Grubhub started that whole conversation pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about sort of your kind of entrepreneurship journey. Like you've gotten into this, obviously you started off in San Francisco, you got here now. Where do you see this going? You've got a lot of years ahead of you, it would appear.
Yeah, I mean, the philosophy that not just myself, but also the founders, John and Arik, we believe in using technology to make use of wasted capacity or excess capacity of resources, yep. right? And you've seen that model over and over again. It's what Airbnb does, what Uber does. Basically, use resources to its fullest extent by connecting them to people who actually want
leveraging the economies of scale, so that you can actually go back and take away waste.
Exactly right, and you're seeing cloud kitchens that's now a thing, right?
Yeah,
kitchens that are popping up to kind of serve demand.
Pear Chef is one of them that comes to mind that's local here that is just launching and. Particularly in the buildings that are now chasing after that amenity, kind of that amenity space.
Exactly right. So our take on it is we don't want to add new kitchens. We don't want to make our own food. We don't want to spin up industrial kitchens. We think there are enough kitchens that are out there in the community, the restaurants that happen to be in the street or across the street. And we can use their excess capacity to serve what the customer wants.
Yep.
And that's kind of the basis on which Second Kitchen is based.
How tech heavy is this then? Because I feel like I'm trying to think back to a couple of conversations we've had about different food companies. So if I used Crafty and said that they sort of get to be a restaurant without the downside.
Yeah.
I look at you guys and it's like you actually have the ability to be the supply manager without the downside.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and so from your standpoint, how tech heavy is it? Because I think the restaurants will, unless it's run by Nick Kokonis, is always going to struggle with the actual metrics.
Yeah.
But if you're dedicated, your task quite literally is to know the numbers.
We're a data company. Right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're actually starting to make menu changes and quality changes based on data.
Which help them all out. They have to love that.
Exactly right. We know it to the minute when every item is delivered. We know the items that people want in bars.
Yep.
For example,
pizza and wings.
Yeah. But it's things like shareables, for example. Yep. Empanadas are making a huge comeback.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
A lot of places have, and tacos, a lot of things that, people want in groups. That's not, in food delivery, where in classic food delivery, when you're getting the meal, it's a bit different, right? So we can use data to decide which menu items make more sense.
Yep.
And we empower the restaurant with everything they need, including which table the customer is sitting at, how to bundle orders. There's a lot of tech that happens in the background. What I love about it the most is from a customer perspective, when you're using the service, it feels very, seamless, right? You're just placing the order, swiping credit card. But behind it, there's so much tech that basically makes sure that you're getting it in minutes.
I absolutely love this. It's just like one of those, when you see the companies that have so little wasted movement.
Yeah.
In order for this to work, there's so few, there's a lot of work, but there's so few steps. It's these are the people who want to be able to eat in their office.
Yeah.
Here's the people nearest them who make the food that they would most likely want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our job to make sure that they can communicate in the least time-consuming way possible. And then it's our job to learn from their decisions to enable them to do things quicker, better, faster, smoother, better, everything.
Yeah. And there is the go-to-market thing. And you have companies like Fooda and Crafty going for the corporate offices.
Yep.
That's not the direction we're going in. Right?
Yeah.
We're going for businesses that benefit from having customers stay longer, spend more in the business. So your brewery, your tap room. We've been getting requests from wine bars, tea lounges, bowling alleys, comedy theaters,
any place
hotels.
People conjugate.
Yeah,
what I mean. It's that includes. I mean, how many? This is actually a really interesting thought. How many? I was just at, I forget the address, but I was just at Cheetah Digital.
Uh-huh.
And their building has this common space that's basically doesn't have food. I think it has beer, kegs or whatever, but it's self-serve. It's not paid.
Yeah.
That is the most common space in every building now is to have this community area.
Totally.
None of them have a kitchen and they would be it would be a very bad decision on their part to put one in.
Yeah.
You guys could serve. There's got to be 100 buildings in Chicago that you could provide that service.
Yeah, and we are community. I mean, it's the community room, right? And then you can get from restaurants that are within the building to serve you right then. It's completely on demand. There's no preparation or having someone on site. It's basically using the kitchen that exists today.
And I'm assuming you guys just take a cut off the top of the tab from the restaurant.
Yep, you guessed it.
Simple enough. This is cool. Where do people go to learn more about it?
Yeah, so you can go to secondkitchen.com if you're a business and you want to set up your own virtual kitchen through us. And if you're a customer, visit us at pretty much any bar, brewery, tap room in the Midwest that doesn't have a kitchen. We're growing pretty fast.
It would appear that way. Awesome. Before I let you go, we are going to do a little startup showcase. So
awesome.
1 second, he's queuing it up. Throw your headphones on real quick.
We are building a platform for interactive live streaming of tabletop games such as Magic the Gathering or Settlers of Catan, just to name a couple. Right now, there are about 200 million people worldwide who enjoy playing tabletop games, and many of those people also enjoy watching the games. Unfortunately, it can be difficult to see rules of cards or game pieces on the screen because the images are small or blurry, and there's also a lot of hidden information such as the decks the players are playing or even the player stats. We're solving these problems using image recognition and interactivity that allow the viewer of the stream to hover over cards or game pieces and access previously hidden information with on-screen pop-out buttons. The most exciting part of this is that viewers are also able to purchase products live through the stream. So the streamer makes commissions on the product sale, which incentivizes streamers to produce more content for the viewers and fans to consume.
Simple enough. Okay, so you can go to republic.co/cardboard-live, and you can check out their campaign. I think they may have already actually hit their max, which is a good thing. We like when companies hit their max in their raising. I think as founders, we particularly enjoy when you're overfunded. Yeah. The gist of this, I don't know if you kind of picked up on it, but the gist behind this is basically a platform for using the gaming that's going on already in esports, and you look at like Twitch, yeah, and sort of being able to bring that to like the actual like in-person interactive and the gaming board piece, which we've been nerding out over esports for a couple of weeks now here, I mean longer than that, but like in general, just because there's such a huge opportunity there. Yeah. What are your thoughts on things like this?
Yeah, and maybe I'm not the best, you know.
That's why we sent it to you. We like the idea is to have people in here who can just like listen. Like as a founder,
yeah,
I've heard an investment pitch or two. I've made a few.
So I mean, back in the day when esports started to become a thing, I was the first who said who you know kind of questioned it and yeah, says do people want to sit down
and watch someone
and
else
watch
play
someone
video
else
games?
Video games? And so you know, I was proven very wrong in that situation, and you know, board games are definitely becoming a thing, and much more so. I've seen, you know, board game cafes now,
yep,
and a lot of subcultures, especially with indie games, because unlike video games, board games you can have a lot of indie board games spin, yep, up very quickly, so that it can have a lot of cult following. And whenever there is some sort of you know, this cult following for a video game or for a board game, you can have that kind of live streaming and an audience build around it.
I agree with you on that. Here's my counter.
Yeah.
And I said this on the show on Saturday, and again, anyone can listen to these live pitches on Saturdays from 1 to 2 on WGN Radio or wherever, Alexa. That's the simplest way.
Yeah.
The reality is, for the hardened strategist who wants to watch Call of Duty, whatever, mm-hmm, on Twitch, that market is a lot, I mean, it's big, but it's a lot smaller than the market of people who are there for like the intriguing content or like somebody like quick sniping people down, like all of it, you know, just like craziness.
Yeah.
The, like the all the massive movement and fast things and colors coming at you.
Yeah.
The market for strategy behind in-person games has got to be even less.
Yeah.
And so my challenge in this is like, I love the ability for the gamers, the physical gamers, to be able to create revenue just like the e-gamers are.
Sure.
But what I think makes the esports thing work, whereas in-person, and I would go so far as to even say the reason the NFL works but all of the other football leagues don't,
mm-hmm,
is the talent and the spectacle.
Yeah.
So like when I look at like the esports thing, like I can become the Greek Freak.
Yeah.
And like dunk and I can like even like change the face and make it me and do shit like you couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
And that is what's compelling to me as a watch. I'm like, holy cow, like it's actually kind of cool. In the board game space, any of those, like, I think you're only looking at strategy,
yeah,
and the interesting nuances of the game, in which case the CPM is probably higher, but like the number total addressable market is a lot less.
Yeah.
That's my take on that.
That's a very good point. I would think of, you know, think of like Super Bowl, like,
yep,
high action versus like a poker tournament, right?
Yeah.
It's where you're looking at, you know, the players and the strategy for it, and so this is where you have to kind of monetize more per user. You're not going to have that huge fan base, maybe.
Yeah.
It's more, you know, a small cultish following.
Which is to say, it does not, yeah, to say that you have to only pursue companies that have an insane amount of money coming at them. I mean,
yeah,
it's interesting that the World Series of Poker, I think it's $10 million or whatever it is you win.
Yeah.
And the Patriots will spend $10 million on the rings that those guys get for winning the Super Bowl, just to put it in perspective.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that there's not a business there. And I think there, well, clearly there is, because I think they've actually reached their oversold. But it's interesting. This is why I have conversations with people like you. Come on. It's like, I wasn't expecting to hear a gaming pitch today, but like,
that's awesome.
It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
very cool. I appreciate, Nick, you coming on the show and taking this time. I hope to have you guys on again and again, and
awesome.
Keep following your success. I will become a user whether I want to intentionally or not, because I go to places that don't have food and I like to eat. So that's the deal.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify. Follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.